Welcome to KMXT's Talk of the Rock, our local community affairs program, where we explore issues and organizations related to our community. Talk of the Rock is hosted by members of the KMXT news team.
Good afternoon, and thank you for joining us here at KMXT 100.1 FM. Joining me today is Darren Scott of KEA. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
I'm quite well. Thank you for asking. So,
good.
What is KEA and how is it organized?
All right. So KEA is Kodiak Electric Association. We are the local electric cooperative here for the community of Kodiak, owned and established by the community since 1941.
So I know that KEA is operated as a cooperative. So as a consumer, what are the primary differences then for purchasing energy from a cooperative as opposed to a traditional, say, major metro energy company?
Okay, quite a few differences. Okay, so basically a lot of the basics are the same, you know, from an engineering perspective. We have the power distribution lines, power generation, customer service, all those type of things. But the big difference, I guess, really in a lot of ways revolves around the customer service and the ownership of the utility. A large investor-owned utility, which is what those big metro utilities usually are, they are owned by a group of investors, you know, basically Wall Street type, you know, whatever, that could be mutual funds or whatever, but they're owned by these investors, and they serve whatever communities and state they're in. We are a little bit different. We're owned by the members, and that makes us special, that it really puts things in line in a lot of ways. So when we're working on doing something for our members, we're doing it for our owners as well. So our customers and our owners are the same, and that doesn't have the tension that you might have where your customers and your owners are two different groups of people. It allows us to 100% focus on the membership.
So for the cooperative model that you're describing, is this something that you think in general can work just about anywhere, or can it only really occur under certain conditions?
You know, they were originally established back in the 30s. It was a law passed by the FDR administration and the legislation at the time. And those large investor-owned utilities did not want to get into rural America. There just wasn't the economics for them to do that. So the communities took it upon themselves to do that, and they helped to get some financing through the federal government to kind of start these. The Rural Electrification Act is really what it was. And so it's worked all across rural America. And in some ways, where rural America was in the 1930s, it's gotten to be bigger towns and bigger areas. Even like Anchorage is now fully a co-op. So bigger cities, it can work, and it's worked well in multiple places. And it keeps things in line. It keeps the membership goals the same. So you have the owner and the customer being the same person, and you don't have that third party out there that puts you in friction. So when we're deciding on a big project, an investment for the community, we can look holistically, what is the best thing for the town here and the best thing for our membership? And when you've got to look at, well, that's a good thing for the customer, but it may not be a good thing for my stockholder, you get that friction. I think it could work anywhere. And, you know, co-ops have been around a long time. And it's a proven business model, and it's not for profit. So it keeps that kind of function out of it. And in today's environment, it could be a solution in a lot of ways.
So now I have to ask the question that I've been dying to ask since I got to Kodiak. My background is as a sustainability reporter. I like looking at energy, particularly renewables. How does a rural energy co-op on the last frontier end up with such robust renewable energy infrastructure?
You know, that's been quite a story. It's been quite a journey along the way. It's been a lot of fun too. I'm an engineer by trade, so getting into some of the engineering details have been fun to surmount. But I'd give the credit really back to being a cooperative in a lot of ways. So I'm the president and CEO of the cooperative, and I report to a board of directors. The board of directors is elected from the community as a whole. So I basically directly report to your representatives from the community. And with that, they came out and they set a goal for us, or a vision for us, back, gosh, at around 2005. And the goal at the time was, we're going to, not so many words, we're going to be a renewable company in the future. Then it's going to be cost effective. At the time, it was 95% renewable power generation with cost effective means. And that's basically what it meant. And with that, they took some risk with that. But they looked at what the community really needed and what they wanted over time. And this is something that's different than where an IOU would be, because we could look holistically for the town and we could really look at 15, 20, 30 years down the road and make those kind of decisions that may or may not be, you know, the best stock return for day one, but holistically over the future, they really were good and they have turned out to be even better than what we estimated at the time. And so, you know, having a board, having it locally owned, having them set that vision. And then another thing with that, that I think is different, I have to give credit back to the community of Kodiak and for the board, they set out the ability to absorb some risk. And that's not usual for an electric utility, no matter what kind of business model you have. Electric utilities are very risk avoidance. But we took a look and we said that, and the board really pointed out that burning diesel is a risk. Burning diesel is a risk in a lot of ways. It's a risk economically because diesel prices go up and down so much. And it's also a risk environmentally. So we were already absorbing risk. So they were able to take a look at that, again, holistically from a community perspective and say, let's take the risk on the technology side. Let's bring wind turbines up, utility size, the first ones in the state of Alaska to do that. Let's take a look at batteries. Let's take a look at flywheels and let's integrate all these things together. And there were risks all along the way to make that happen, you know, financially, technically, particularly, but they've all worked really well. And I think that ability to take risk and the community support along the way too, has just been wonderful to make that happen. And having that community of Kodiak behind you, making those decisions, kind of brings a lot of confidence to the utility to take these kind of steps.
So I know you mentioned that the goal was to reach a 95% renewable energy. Where does Kodiak stand on that now?
Well, that goal got moved. First, that was at 95% back in 2005. We're like, well, how can we even make this? This is a big goal the board set for us. But we made that. And we made that in the late, kind of probably 2009 timeframe. And so after a few years of really making that stuff, well, let's move the bar. We really think we can run 98%. And we've been running 98% since around 14, 15. And we've been running about, I think 2020 was about 99% renewable. And that's been pretty standard the last 5 or 6 years. We're basically 100% renewable utility now.
So where's that remaining percentage point coming from?
Well, and that's unique to Kodiak. So when you're in the lower 48, and if you're in Seattle, you could follow the power lines from your house. You could connect them down to Phoenix or San Diego. They're all kind of connected together so they can work together as a common grid. And there's power generators all over the place in Arizona and Washington and Oregon, and they all can work on this holistic grid together. We're not connected to Homer or Anchorage or anyone else. We have to run an islanded grid. And the majority of our power comes from the Terra Lake Hydroelectric Plant. It makes about 80% or so of our annual power. And it's in the remote part of the community, the remote part of the island. And there's a 17-mile transmission line that moves the power from it over a mountain pass into town. So with all those eggs in that basket, that's a little scary running a utility like that in Alaska. So we have a fleet of power generation units that run on diesel fuel here in town in case we get into a risk situation where Terra Lake is down, but because we have to keep the lights on for you. So having that fleet of units, we need to run them every now and then just to make sure they're going to work for you. And that's where most of that 1% comes from, is every quarter we run the units to make sure they're ready on standby and ready to go. So that's the majority of the 1%.
So you mentioned that there were a few other technologies that were involved in keeping Kodiak renewable. I think you mentioned flywheels there. Tell us a little bit about the flywheels.
Yeah, the flywheels are, again, back to the risk that that we took a look at and stuff. Very unique story in that. We were the first ones in North America to even bring these type of flywheels in for this type of technology. This kind of goes back. So there's that large crane down there at the Matson dock. And with that, there used to be a much smaller version of that was diesel driven. And Matson and the city of Kodiak at the time really said, well, we want to move this toward this electric crane. They had this ability to get this electric driven crane there. But there's a lot of technological issues that running a big electric crane like that on a small islanded grid like ours, a small electric grid. So we run an average of 17, 18 megawatts on the system, depending on what's going on with fishing and how cold it is outside and stuff. But on average, 17 or 18. Well, that crane, as it's lifting up a container and putting on a boat, goes from 0 megawatt load to 2 megawatts of load. And then it takes and it drops the load back on the ship, and it can inject, say, about 1.5 megs of load back into the system. Well, that's a highly variable situation for us. And so if you're looking at, you're running 15 megawatts and 2 megawatts goes up, 1.5 goes down, that makes our load go from 15 to 17, then down to 13.5. And that's a very hard thing to do, because as an electric utility, it's probably different than any other commodity on Earth. We have to supply exactly what our customers are using on a millisecond basis all the time. And if we got a whack with that, then the lights, we have problems. And so that's where the flywheels came in. The city and Mattson really wanted to get this crane in. It was a great deal. And again, going back to the cooperative community approach, board of directors took a look at this, said, you know, really what's best for the community here is to get that crane on board. I mean, that's a great asset for our town here. It's going to last us many years to come. It helps us in the cargo and the shipping and all those type of good things. So we found a solution and brought these flywheels in. Now, what the flywheels are is they're, imagine a mass, you know, several thousand pounds of mass spinning around at 3,600 revolutions in a minute. And so you've got about 26,000 pounds spinning around at 3,600 revolutions in a minute, and that's connected to a generator. And so you take that momentum that you have there, and once that crane says, all right, I'm going to start lifting this load, the flywheel senses it. There's a fiber optic cable between the two, and they say, okay, it's starting to pull the load up. It's starting to use electricity. We're going to send this mass and convert it to electricity, and then it's going to basically filter that and send that power to the crane. The crane lifts it up. Our grid doesn't see the big fluctuation. And then when the crane lowers the box back down, the power that it generates, it's kind of like a Toyota Prius, the crane is, and it regenerates that power and sends it back into our grid. The flywheels grab that power, spin themselves back up for the next load. And it just works again and again and again. And when the crane's not in operation, the flywheels can do a similar kind of magic and help keep our grid stable with those wind turbines that we have.
I remember when I was a young kid reading about flywheels in popular science at a point when they were pretty much like in the realm of science fiction. And now you have like a very a working one here on Kodiak, which is pretty remarkable. So Kodiak, yes, is a town. We have renewable energy here, but we also have on the island a high propensity for gas heating, and it's the sort of place where it's often a good idea to have, you know, a gas-hungry truck or large SUV with all-wheel drive on it. So how do you see Kodiak shifting from a place with renewable energy to a place with renewable lifestyle?
We're already seeing that now. One of the steps we recently did is we expanded our hydroelectric plant, again, which is kind of our backbone for a renewable grid. We added a lot more water to it, about 25% more water. And with that, we're planning for the future. And that's exactly where we see the future going. There's a couple of different ways you can heat your house. The standard way is you got your, you know, oil boiler type thing. But there are heat pumps and there's electric boilers right now. Electric boilers are very clean. They're not quite as efficient as a heat pump is. But a heat pump as well is even more cost effective than running oil. So when you're building new, or sometimes you can convert your house over to it and such. And that's the solution. We see electric heat in one of those forms is the solution for the future. And if you look at kind of how you're operating your house, yeah, you've got a water bill, or you've got your well pump, or you've got your electric bills and things like that. But your big bill that's sitting out there is your heating bill. And going back to that cooperative approach, we can help with that. And you know, especially with heat pumps and maybe with electric heat, depending on how you use it, you lose your oil tank at your house, you lose all that. And we can help become that solution to keep your energy cost and keep your house heated better in the future. And we see our rates staying fairly stable for years to come too. And I don't think the oil industry can do that. On the electric car side, we see those coming too. I mean, worldwide. I mean, you can't pick up or look at Yahoo News on any given day and there's going to be some article about electric vehicles in some form or function. They're coming, And Kodiak Island is geared great for that. I mean, you don't drive that far. You know, the range on these cars is 300 miles. Well, you can go to and fro town, you know, 20 times before you got to even plug it in at your house to make that happen. So the range anxiety is going away. You know, there might still be a place for that, you know, that big truck, obviously, that moves things around. But those are even coming. Tesla has a truck now. Some of the large 18-wheelers come electric now. So that technology is out there. And we want to be prepared on our end to help Kodiak get there. And even on the electric heat side, we've even got an incentive program that will help cover the cost by basically lowering your electric bill in the future if you install new electric heat. And replace that with the old diesel. So we're trying to help in those ways too, while we still have some surplus power with our hydro. And we just want to be part of that solution in the future.
So I know that the city is planning to acquire some electric vehicles as some of their older vehicles get phased out. Are you guys involved in that planning? Are you putting in, I know that people evidently will have, like, if you own a Tesla, you probably have an outlet for it at your home, but are there going to be some like available around town?
You know, we have talked to the city about that. We've talked to the city manager and some of his staff as well. We've had a few different meetings, and we see that coming. There very likely could be a test spot somewhere downtown in the future, and also I believe the city's looking at. I mean, I don't think they've done it yet, but they're looking into some of their electric or some of their vehicles when they replace them going to electric as well. So that's continuing, that we see that being part of the future. It's been excited, and it's great again that we, like, just like when we did the electric crane, we were partners with the city and trying to make all those pieces come together. And that's again, kind of harping on it, but that cooperative approach, we could look at it from whether it's the city or the borough, because we all kind of serve the same people for the most part. And we can work and try to partner to make these kind of good things happen for the community.
So asking a bit more of a broad question here, what do you see as the future of renewable energy in rural America? And do you think that it will resemble something akin to what we have here?
You know, I think in rural America, probably some of the differences are going to be, I think it's going to be a big part of it. And you just, again, you read any headlines now, renewable energy, especially with the last election and stuff, is going to be moving probably even at a faster pace than it was even before. And it was moving at a pretty fast pace before. Probably some of the differences are that we are very blessed here with a lot of rain. Some days it doesn't feel like a blessing, but it is. And with the topography we have, we've got a nice lake that we can build our renewable system around a hydro plant that's got a lake with it, which brings a lot of advantages. So that makes us special here. But other places, you know, today is not the usual day, but if you're down in Arizona or whatever else, the sunshine that you've got available and building solar into things, solar keeps on getting cheaper every day. Or if you're in the Midwest, you've got the sun and the wind on a regular basis. I think everyone's going to have to build their own story. You know, ours is hydro and wind with energy storage because we're an isolated grid. In Arizona, it could be solar and then maybe a little bit of natural gas in the background to back it up. And then in the Midwest, it could be wind and solar. So I think every place is going to have to build a story. But I don't see why in rural America, not only can we be the providers in rural America for ourselves, but that's where the land is. And wind and solar both take land, and we can help provide that for the large metropolitan areas as well.
So transporting goods such as food and other consumables to Kodiak generates a pretty significant amount of carbon if it's getting barged up, right? If you order something on Amazon, there are, you know, many gallons of diesel fuel associated with driving that from, say, the Seattle area all the way up to Kodiak. So are there any plans at the state level or otherwise to lessen the environmental impacts of shipping to a community as hard to access as Kodiak?
You know, I don't know about the shipping stuff, but in between, we were actually going back to the crane. We worked with the city in Matteson to get that crane off of diesel and move it on. I know there's been some talk kind of worldwide of taking those kind of shipping vehicles that are moving the cargo boxes around to make those electric. And we are sharing information with actually the Port of Seattle through some national labs of how we did what we did here to help them on the other end, that maybe they can electrify more of their systems on that end. So helping the endpoints out in both places, I definitely see that happening. I don't know enough about, you know, how you would ship electrically or more efficiently, you know, large container vessels from a Seattle to a Kodiak, but you know, technology keeps coming. You never know what it might be, but we are definitely engaged on this end, and we're even helping a little bit on the other end to try to get those both those endpoints to have a lower carbon footprint.
So, every Talk of the Rock episode I do always comes back to a few questions about COVID and how it's changing things up. So, has the energy consumption habits of Kodiak changed at all during the pandemic?
You know, we've seen a little adjustments here and there. I think one, it's kind of impacted the fishing, you know, the processing, and that's our largest kind of point source load. So they've had their own impacts in that, and it's adjusted how they've done their business and things. And we've seen some impacts there. And then we've seen some signs that might be a little bit more electric use in the residents and a little bit less in some of the small businesses. They would translate to people just like myself today, working at home instead of working in the office. But it's not been anything major on that end. And I think it's disrupted our lives a whole lot more than it's disrupted how we've used electricity.
So what's in the future for Kodiak's energy infrastructure? What's the next big exciting project?
Well, a couple of projects we just kind of finished, and again, kind of working with the community. So we have some surplus power when we built that hydro expansion. And the reason you do is hydro expansion projects are really difficult to do. And you don't just build a little bit, you build a lot, because it's a lot of infrastructure work that has to go into it. So you have surplus, and then you use that up, and then you build on from there. So we're in that surplus stage right now. So we were able to partner with the borough and the school district, and we've got electric boilers in the high school and the middle school and the fisheries research building over on Near Island. So that project is just kind of getting kicked off. The middle school has been going on a while, but the high school and the borough fisheries building is just kind of going now. And that's a big thing for us to help. So now we get to the community pool is heated by electric heat. The whole high school is, the middle school is, and that's a lot of heat in our town, a lot of diesel usage. And so we're going to look at things like that. The future, you know, just like we talked about before, EVs, electric heat in the house. And then as that load climbs and our surplus starts to go away, and that's probably still several years out, we're going to have to look at new generation sources. And wind's been very successful for us. So could we expand the wind project? Potentially. We've kind of tapped out the hydro in a lot of ways. We can always make some refinements there, but that's the bulk of that's already taken now. So we're looking at more wind, and technology just keeps on coming. You know, tidal, they're learning more and more all the time. Solar, even for places like us, could even continue to get better. We're going to continue to look all around and always look at our hydro plant too, because if there's more resources we can get out of that, then that's a really good, stable use of renewable power.
So what is the anticipated, I know that the dams are essentially fairly renewable in their ability to be maintenance, but what is the anticipated lifetime for the wind turbines, and will they be replaced or repaired indefinitely as they begin to show their age?
Okay, so the original estimate from General Electric, that's who we bought the wind turbines from, was 20 years. And we put the first ones in 2009, but overall they've been operating great. I mean, they do have maintenance issues just like any, you know, operating equipment does. But I think with good maintenance, they can last much longer than that. You replace components. The wind turbines, and if you happen to see when they got built, they're just a bunch of components all kind of put together. So in reverse, if this component fails or that component fails, then you can just take it out and replace it with another component out there. There are thousands and thousands of those type of wind turbines out around the world. So there's a good parts providing for it and those type of things. So you can get spare parts for them. And such. So I imagine that's going to continue for a while. Now, if it's 15 years down the future and they're kind of really starting to show their age and we need more wind power, well, maybe we'll put in bigger, more efficient wind turbines at the time, because wind turbines are getting bigger and better every year. So could that be part of the puzzle in the future? It sure could be. So, you know, with renewable energy growing the way it's growing, it's exciting to watch. And, you know, if we're looking at 15 years down the road, who knows what we could put in? We've got wind, we've got water, we've got tidal, we've got wave. All those capabilities are here. And even the way I was reading an article a little while back that they were able to take solar panels, but even when it was raining, they take that kinetic energy off the rain and make electricity with it. So who knows what the future could bring for us?
Yeah, that is some sci-fi stuff right there.
Yeah, that's some sci-fi stuff, yeah.
So I've been hearing a little bit about it on the radio, but can you talk a little bit about KEA scholarship projects?
Yeah, so we do scholarships each year, and that's really kind of back from donations from our members, and we get to move that toward the community. So we've got quite a few high school scholarships for the graduating seniors, and then we've also got continuing education scholarships as well for the students that are, you know, their members here or their families are still members here to continue on their education. Education's so expensive. And our top scholarship we've got budgeted right now is a $10,000 Marion Sewell scholarship to a graduating senior, and the second highest scholarship, $7,000 one. So there's a lot of scholarships out there. They're due February 19th. All the information's on our website. And it's a fun time each year. You get to see the resumes of the students and things like that. And we've got some wonderful kids here in town and wonderful continuing education students as well. And it's a great opportunity for our utility to be able to help these students go off to school. School's expensive, and it's a fun thing to do and fun thing to be part of.
Yeah, no, you're telling me school is definitely expensive. So, and the ability to do philanthropic work like that, does that come with the territory of being in a cooperative arrangement?
You know, in a lot of ways, I'm sure that, you know, some of the investor-owned utilities are doing, you know, tax-deductible type work. And that's, you know, and I'm sure there's good reasons why they're doing it, not to belittle that, but they, you know, they get the credit back of the tax deduction. But we're not for profit, and everything we roll into, we just want to roll back and serve the community as best we can. And with that, with the scholarships and those type of things, it all fits that cooperative model great. And, you know, just the word cooperative, we just want to cooperate with the community and make it all work together. So it's really fun to be part of. You mentioned these IOU type things, and that's where I used to work when I started my career. And it's just such a difference to be on the cooperative side of it. I can't underestimate enough that when you've got a stockholder on one side and you've got a customer on the other, and the tensions those bring, but when that customer is your owner, everything you can do focuses on that person, and it just makes it a really rewarding place to do. And you can do projects like the wind turbines and the hydro expansions because everything rolls back to help the town.
Well, this has been your weekly episode of KMXT's Talk of the Rock. Thank you so much for joining me today. I had as a guest Darren Scott of KEA. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you, Dylan. Appreciate it. It was fun.
All right. Well, you have yourself a great day now.
You do too. Take care.
This has been KMXT's Talk of the Rock, our local community affairs program. Tune in next Tuesday at 12:30 to hear more about local issues and organizations.